Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. The Steelers and Seahawks, Sunday, 1 p.m. Acrisure Stadium. That game on television will be on Fox. Adam Amin and Mark Sanchez, I believe, the pairing for that one. So a bit low on the pecking order for Seattle and Pittsburgh, and certainly not the national footprint that the opener against the Jets had. Fan Hotline, that's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We go back out to that Fan Hotline, and that is where we find the great Ray Fittipaldo, who is brought to you by the Western PA Injury Attorneys of LGKG, serving as your home team for over 90 years. Ray, the Steelers' defense has been a point of discussion this week. Terrell Austin spoke yesterday. He said, oh, you're going to have a few stinkers here and there, but they've had more than a few in the last two seasons. And in fact, Pony had this stat yesterday. In their last nine games, if you include week one, if you include the playoff game, they've given up something like 27 points per game. That's pretty unacceptable from a defense with this price tag.
Yeah, absolutely. And with all these expectations too, and I know the price tag is certainly something that comes along with that, but yeah, people didn't want to hear that, especially since the last time we saw this football team, they got gouged by the Baltimore Ravens, embarrassed on national television. You know, I was at the game, but I heard all about Kirk Herbstreit questioning the effort of the football team. Now, you know, Terrell Austin said that wasn't the issue in New York. He said when he walked off the field in Baltimore, he felt like he was physically dominated, or his unit was physically dominated. He didn't feel that way. And if you guys listened to Cam Hayward yesterday too, there was a lot of talk about not being in the right gap. You know, maybe they weren't schematically sound. So maybe if they clean that up this week against the Seahawks, it'll be better. But Donnie, I don't care if it's 299, 182, whatever. 100 yards on the ground used to be the standard for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they've given up 100-yard rushings in 10 of their last 20 games. So they're far away from their standard.
Yeah, and I know that we have heard, well, Mike Tomlin, he said they could be a historic defense. He put that out there to raise the expectation and put pressure on them. The fact is, he still said it, and those words are going to look funny if the defense continues down this path. That 2008 defense, which was a historic defense, they gave up, what, like one game where a team had more than 100 yards, or there was like one rusher that had more than 100 yards over the course of the whole season, and it came in a blowout win. So it happened mostly in garbage time. That is the standard this defense should try to have.
Yeah, I mean, that 2008 defense, legitimately, you know, whether you talk about it in Pittsburgh or nationally, I think that's a consensus top five, or if not top five, top 10 defense of all time in the NFL. So, you know, I was trying to think back, you know, if this does turn out to be a bad quote on Mike, like what were some of the other questionable quotes from Mike Tomlin over the years? Donnie, I always go back to 2017, where I think they were playing like a Sunday night game against NBC, and he told Tony Dungy, basically, it's going to be us and the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. Then what? Two or three weeks later, they go out and you know, they lose to Jacksonville in the divisional round. So that was a bad one for Mike. Hopefully the Steelers can get this turned around and, you know, he doesn't have egg on his face like he did back then. But yeah, after 1 week, it's not looking like it was one of the smartest things that Mike ever said.
Do you think Terrell Austin will be on some sort of hot seat if we get to the end of the season and the defense is, let's just say, middle of the pack? Like, okay, they turn the ball over a good bit. You know, maybe they sack the quarterback, but otherwise it's a pretty mediocre unit.
Well, I mean, it would depend on what their record would be. Listen, if they get a bunch of turnovers and they're 11-6, it's probably not going to be a lot of pressure on Austin or Mike Tomlin. But, yeah, listen, if they're middle of the pack and they're 9-8 and they miss the playoffs, then, yeah, you know, they go out and get Jalen Ramsey. They make some big moves in the offseason. They secure T.J. Watt for the long term. Yeah, I think in that scenario, yes, I think he would be on the hot seat. But let's see what happens. You know, week ones in the NFL can sometimes be tricky. You know, there's a lot of guesswork that goes involved, especially when you have new head coaches and different coordinators. Arthur Smith talked about that a little bit yesterday. It just took the Steelers a while to kind of figure out what was going on in that game. So, you know, the Seahawks have a little bit more of a resume there. McDonald has been there for more than a year now. So maybe week two and beyond will be a little bit different for the Steelers defense.
Are you concerned at all by the tape put out there by Keanu Benton last week?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't good. You know, the coaches, both Mike Tomlin and Terrell Austin, want to pass it off as a, you know, first week thing. He's going to get better. I don't know about you, Donnie. I for a second round pick, Benton has just kind of left me wanting. Like, I expect more from somebody who was basically a top 50 pick, and we just haven't seen it. And I would hate for this to be the case, but the longer this goes on and he's not able to hold up to bigger and stronger guys inside, I just wonder if he's miscast as a nose tackle. I just wonder if it'd be better off being a three technique. Listen, if he's not a starter, maybe he's effective in sub packages. I heard the reasons why yesterday, that they don't want to play YA Black nose just yet. I get it. He's young. He's not going to have the recognition skills that Benton has, but at some point you do have to get bigger and stronger in there. So I do think that's a move that they have in their back pocket, but I don't think we're going to see it this week.
It does sound like, though, according to what Terrell Austin said yesterday, YA Black will play more snaps against Seattle, correct?
Yeah, and they like his length. They think he could play over guards and tackles, and he's got those big, long arms. He could lock out over defenders. I think he has the versatility to be a guy for up and down the line, you know, at some point in his career. But the way Austin explained it yesterday, they don't want to put too much on his plate at this point. They want to kind of have him master one skill first or one position first before they add more to it. But listen, if Benton struggles again, if the run defense struggles again, at some point they're going to have to make a move. YA Black to the nose is the most obvious thing that could help. And I think if it continues on, the way it was against the Jets, they're probably going to have to pull that trigger sooner than they would probably like.
How much should Steelers fans anticipate seeing Jabril Peppers in this game?
After only 5 days, Donnie, I don't get the sense that they're going to rush him in to the lineup at all. He does play special teams, so I could certainly see him getting a hat. I could see him maybe get in for a few plays here or there. But the Steelers are a team that's had some issues with communication in the past, especially in the back end, and I would think they would want to make sure Peppers is up to speed with the defense before they throw him out there into game situations where he would be counted on. So definitely special teams. I think he'll get a hat for that reason. But as long as Chuck Clark is healthy, I'm not sure how much he's going to play in the defense.
Is Joey Porter Jr. going to play?
Well, not a good sign that he didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday. They're out there right now practicing. We'll see if there's any better news. But, you know, soft tissue injury, hard to see him going back out there on Sunday if he hasn't practiced this week.
The comments from Patrick Queen went a little bit viral after the game on Sunday. Some of the language he used, we unfortunately can't use here on the Fan. But It's obvious those guys know they didn't play well. Do you anticipate a better effort against the Seahawks?
Yeah. I mean, listen, Mike Tomlin said he wants them to be stouter. Terrell Austin talked about getting off blocks. I mean, Donnie, that stuff is just effort. And, you know, I don't know why it happened, especially in week one when you have an entire offseason to think about that performance in Baltimore. But they weren't physical. They didn't play well. They did nothing to that would say that they were the more physical football team in that game. So, to me, that's a little bit concerning. You know, you would think they would be out to, you know, avenge what happened in Baltimore, and the fact that they didn't look good from a physicality standpoint is concerning. But again, one game, I'll give them another opportunity or two to turn that around before I really crush them.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We can't talk much more about concerning play, Ray, without talking about Broderick Jones and his week one performance. What's that panic level for you? Somebody who played offensive line at the D1 level, Ray, the panic level for you when it comes to Broderick Jones?
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned. I'm not going to lie. Mike said all the right things. They're gonna ride this out for a little while longer, but you know, to me, Donnie, the fact that his hands are always down at his hips, and it's just so easy for opposing edge rushers to get their hands on his chest. And it's something we've seen for quite some time now. He's never corrected it. You would think that just, you know, coaching or other players on the team telling him what's going on would help. But he doesn't seem to be taking to the coaching for whatever reason. And he also ducks his head. He gets put off balance easily. There's just a slew of issues. And I know Trey Essex talked a little bit about it, you know, earlier in the week on your station. And, you know, Trey wasn't sure if he could turn it around. So he's a first round pick. They're going to give him a few more chances. But after what we saw in New York, I think, you know, the leash might be getting a little bit shorter.
11:21, it's now time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums at 724-443-5610. Talking to Steelers reporter Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette. You know him. Ray, do you think there's a fair chance that Jones gets benched over the course of the season?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if he doesn't play well, that's certainly a possibility. And I've had people tell me, well, they don't have any options. Listen, Calvin Anderson's in the NFL. The guy has started 10 games in the NFL. He's played like in 50 or 60 games. These are NFL players. They are capable guys. I know Andrus Pete played left tackle, but that was earlier in his career. I'm not sure if they would want to do that. But that Andrus Pete would be an option too. I think the point is you can only get by for so long on your draft slot, and if you're not putting good tape out there, there are other guys who could step in and perhaps do a better job. And I think sometimes we kind of look at guys like Calvin Anderson or, you know, some other guys who haven't done much in the NFL, but they're in the NFL. And at this point, I think people are starting to question whether they might be a better option than Broderick Jones.
Talking about Calvin Anderson, we go from that Calvin to another. Calvin Austin with a very nice week one performance. Had some tough grabs, had a touchdown in that win over the Jets. A lot of chatter, Ray, about Tyreek Hill, but the Steelers maybe have something here in Calvin Austin the third.
Yeah, I mean, Don, if you look at the way this offense is set up, as long as DK Metcalf stays healthy, I think they could get by with, you know, a combination of Calvin Austin and Jonnu Smith and Pat Freiermuth and Ben Skowronek. you know, what I saw against the New York Jets, 34 points, passing offense was very efficient. It wasn't like they were going for over 300 yards, but, you know, I think Aaron had like, what, 244, four touchdowns, no picks. I mean, it was really good stuff. So, yeah, for 1 week at least, I think he quieted the talk. I'm not sure, you know, the Tyreek Hill stuff, you know, the domestic violence issue that's come up now. I don't know if the Steelers would want to take that on, but yeah, Calvin Austin stepped up on Sunday, and he's kind of been he's quietly been progressing in each step, right? He missed his rookie year, did a little bit his second year, actually 550 yards and four touchdowns last year. What Mike Tomlin always says, it's reasonable for these guys to take the next step. And I think Calvin Austin could easily be a guy who goes for 705 touchdowns this year. I think that's easily within his grasp.
Only 10 snaps for Roman Wilson in that first game. Do we see more participation from him in week two, Ray?
Yeah, it depends on how these games go. You know, the Steelers didn't possess the ball a lot against the Jets. So, you know, in a different circumstance, maybe if the time of possession is flipped, then Roman Wilson gets a few more opportunities. The other thing was they were behind for so much that game, Donnie. I think Aaron and Arthur really just wanted to go to the guys that they knew that they trusted, right? Guys who have a little bit more of a resume than Roman Wilson. So, you know, if the Steelers come out and play better early, if the defense plays better early, they have a lead, then, yeah, I think you'll see more of Roman Wilson. And he's a guy who has to, you know, put some stats up first and, you know, make a play or two for Aaron in game situations, I think, before they fully trust him.
Austin, do you care if I do a little free association with our friend Ray?
I would love for that to happen, Donnie, yes.
Don't worry, Ray. I only have like three questions, not 15 set aside. DK Metcalf revenge game. Does he score a touchdown?
He does, I think, yes.
Aaron Rodgers needs one touchdown to tie Brett Favre for fourth all time. He needs two to pass him. Does he do it?
Yes, he will do it this week.
How many snaps on offense does Caleb Johnson play?
Oh, I'll go four this week.
Final score, Ray, and your MVP on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with 2017, and I think the Steelers find a way to get DK Metcalf involved against his old team. He was involved last week. He didn't score. I think he's going to score this week.
That's why you're the best. Ray Fittipaldo covers the Steelers for the Post-Gazette. Thank you, Ray.
Thanks, Donnie. See ya.
There we go. Ray Fittipaldo, one of the kindest men in the industry. Join Malzie at Rally House on General Robinson Street, North Shore, from 10 until noon tomorrow. Go get some pit gear before the brawl. Get your black and gold gear for the home opener on Sunday and register for the chance to win $250 in Rally House gift cards. So Ray Fittipaldo, he picks the Steelers to win 20-17 over the Seahawks on Sunday. An old-fashioned push for Ray in that game. The spread for that right now is Steelers -3. We will have fan game day coverage live from Rivers Casino starting at 9 a.m. on Sunday. Myself, Jason Mackey, Mark Cabali. So maybe some wagers will be laid down before kick on Sunday.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
WVU and Pitt coming together to support our communities this Hunger Action Month, because it is Hunger Action Month. For every $1 raised, the food bank can provide up to 3 meals. Get involved and donate now at pittsburghfoodbank.org/pitt. Donnie, football with you on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, in for Joe. Joe had to go back up to Buffalo for the weekend to attend to some family business. Austin Bechtold is with me Behind the Glass. You can follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan, which is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And we go back out to the fan hotline, which is, again, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC services for over 50 years. And that is where we find Nate Breisinger, who covers the Pitt Panthers for Pittsburgh Sports Now. But, Nate, before we get into Pitt and the brawl and all of that, Austin made me aware that you guys were college roommates. Is that correct?
Oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah, that is definitely correct. 2 years.
This is going to set the YouTube chat ablaze, finding out that we have Austin's college roommate, because you really have an opportunity to literally and figuratively put his dirty laundry right out here in front of us. But I feel like you probably won't do that just because you're a good guy.
And Nate wouldn't do that.
No, absolutely not. But it was fun. 2 years. Now COVID impacted the 1 year. But no, it was great living with Austin, with Gulvash. I know Austin's talked about him a couple times. But
Nate, the Panthers go into this game. They're 2-0. Eli Holstein playing well. 8 touchdowns, 2 picks. They seemingly have every advantage going into this backyard brawl. Now, Austin and I kind of feel the same way. We think Pitt will win the game, but it may be more difficult than what Pitt fans anticipate. What's your feeling? You know, you don't have to give a score right now, but what's your gut feeling on this game at a glance?
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for this Pitt team and this Pitt offense because it will be the toughest atmosphere that Cade Bell and Eli Holstein have faced since they've come to Pitt. I mean, Cincinnati was maybe the best one last year, maybe SMU, but nothing compares to what they'll face on Saturday in Morgantown. And while it'll be difficult, they're going to be using some silent counts down there, I think this offense is good enough, at least, you know, Holstein getting the ball out quick enough and the playmakers that they have on the perimeter at receiver, that they can rattle off a couple explosive plays. And I think that could be a huge difference offensively. And I foresee this one. I know that it's a tough atmosphere. It's a rivalry game. So you throw a lot of this stuff out the window, like the spread. I mean, that might not matter in the end, but I think this is the type of game that Pitt on paper right now can go in and really, you know, not dominate per se, but really take control of and win this game rather easily compared to the last three matchups that they've been in with this team.
Do the Panthers have any key injuries that maybe people don't know about going into tomorrow?
They're rather healthy. I think you look back at last week, Tamon Lineham left the game, the cornerback, one of the veteran cornerbacks, and then Rashad Battle was out that game as well, did not dress. Those will probably be game time decisions. I think we won't know until we go down there, but could put more emphasis on those backup corners. Shadarian Harrison's a redshirt sophomore, and Sean Lee Jr. from Harrisburg is a true freshman who played a lot last week and Pitt's win over Central Michigan. So he's already been settling in a little bit, but this one's really going to be like baptism by fire if you go out there, because I think Pitt's front seven can really take away the ground game. So I think West Virginia's going to have to go through the air in this one.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big underlying keys, how healthy Pitt is overall, and West Virginia losing probably its best offensive player last week, Jaheim White going down for the whole season. So they don't really have the offensive firepower that Pitt is able to have. Desmond Reed, yet again, off to a pretty fun start, a touchdown this year, 183 yards from scrimmage. Maybe not quite the path he was on in 2024, but what makes him so dynamic in this Pitt offense, Nate?
I mean, just his ability to make someone miss in space. He needs the holes from the running or from the offensive line in the ground game to help with that. But I mean, once he gets into space, whether it's catching the ball out of the backfield, getting through that first level, the line of scrimmage, I mean, he can just, you know, turn loose. He did that against Duquesne, where he made a cut right at the line of scrimmage, made a linebacker miss, and he was gone for 53 yards. And then the same thing in the punt return game. I mean, he gets the ball in his hands. He's ever so dangerous. And I think that's been the big thing for Pitt this year through two games. Yes, against inferior opponents, but their special teams has been really good. And Desmond Reed's been a big part of that. Again, you know, one of the top 15 all-purpose guys right now in the country at this point. But same with Kenny Johnson in the kick return game. He has ripped off some really big returns as well. Not for touchdowns yet, but he had a 78-yarder. He had a couple other ones. So, but Desmond Reed, I mean, yeah, you put the ball in his hands. That's what makes him so good, is his ability to go out and make a play anytime he has the ball in his hands. And I know that'll be huge for Pitt in this game, because he hasn't maybe done so that much. I mean, other than the 53-yard touchdown, he's only averaging 3.4 yards per carry. That could be a lot better, and that's a little bit on Reed. That's a little bit on the O-line as well, maybe not helping him out as much. So I think this is a game where they're going to have to really lean on him, especially if West Virginia starts to take the pass away.
Yeah, the stat on Kenny Johnson in the return game, the only FBS player since 2022 to record at least 80 kick return yards in each of his team's first two games. He also leads the ACC in that category. So he can be dynamic in the return game. That's also a spot in this game, special teams, where West Virginia could have a chance for a splash. Like, normally you feel in a game where an upset is pulled, there's always something in special teams. So do you feel with Johnson and with what Pitt has on special teams, they really have the advantage in all three facets here?
I think they do, because this has been another step up in the special teams department this year, and especially second year coach and special teams coordinator Jacob Bronowski has really got this unit playing at a high level. And it's not just the returners, it's the blocking, the scheme, everything there has been really good for Pitt. And you look at last year in the brawl, Maverick Gracio came off the edge to block a punt. Those are the type of plays that are going to make this game. Turnovers, takeaways, and they did so last year, and that was huge. Didn't let West Virginia get too much momentum at that point in time, because they just had faked a punt and got a first down, and then they come back, Pitt does, and blocks the punt. But I think some of those plays, yeah, are going to make a huge difference and be key in this game.
The Pitt defense had high expectations coming into this season. So far, the Panthers with a couple of cupcakes on their schedule. That's just sort of how it goes in college football. But now they get a rivalry game. They get to play West Virginia on the road. Who are some of the guys on the defensive side that you want to highlight ahead of the backyard brawl?
I think obviously you have to look at the linebackers there, and they're just so athletic. They're so fast. Now, the depth there is a little bit questionable, just because they lost two players before the season. And right now, between Rasheem Biles, the All-American Kyle Lewis, and the middle linebacker Braylon Lovelace, a Whipple guy, they're going to play 95 to 98% of these snaps on Saturday. Last week, Cameron Lindsay, Nick Lappi, some of the backup guys, they played only 5 snaps. The other 3 played about 60. So that's what Pat Narduzzi wants to do. He talked about when he was at Michigan State as a D coordinator, he wanted his guys, he wanted 11 guys out there the whole time. He didn't want to make too many substitutions if they didn't need to. And I think this linebacker unit can do that. They're conditioned, they're fast, and they can make plays and be disruptive, not only in the backfield, but they're pretty good in coverage. And I think with Pitt against West Virginia, where they're without Jaheim White, they don't have maybe a great ground game coming into this game. If Pitt can limit that ground game just with the front 4 on the defensive line, those linebackers can play a little bit back more, a little bit more in coverage. But on that D-line, you have a really good D-tackle room and Nick James and Sean Fitzsimmons, the Central Valley grad, and Francis Brew has played really well, been one of the best graded players in Pitt's defense in terms of Pro Football Focus. But then also on the edge, they're trying to still find a guy that can really step in and make a play. They have returner Jimmy Scott at the end, but Zach Crothers, a redshirt freshman, has really stepped up these last two games, had a really good game last week against Central Michigan, made a couple plays, had, I think, 2 sacks or at least a sack and a half on the day. That's something they were missing last year. Other than Jimmy Scott, they had Nate Matlack, and they have Blaine Spires starting there this year in replacement of Nate Matlack, but a third guy to really step in, at least early in the season. Sincere Edwards came on a little bit as the year went along, but Crothers has shown some really good flashes so far in the DN.
Nico Markiel, the West Virginia quarterback, he actually played majority of the game 2 years ago. He was 6 of 9 for 60 yards, a touchdown, no picks. That was the last game in Morgantown. That's why I bring that up. One of the ugliest football games anybody has ever witnessed. The 17-6 Pitt loss. Otherwise, he doesn't do much for me. He doesn't put a whole lot of fear or he shouldn't put a whole lot of fear into Pitt's defense. Jalen Henderson, more of a running quarterback, so they could see a mix of him in that. Do you feel the Panthers are prepared to face two QBs in this game, kind of a revolving door that West Virginia may have?
Yeah, I think they are, because they couldn't have had a better game last week in terms of preparation, because Central Michigan rotated three quarterbacks in and showed all three quarterbacks showed something different, could run, could throw. So that's what they're going to expect. And obviously they have some of that tape against Mark Yule from 2023. And then last week as well. I mean, just watching that game last week against Ohio, I mean, he really could not move the ball through the air. So that's why I think limiting the ground game and forcing him to throw, making it one-dimensional, will be pivotal for Pitt, because Mark Yule just hasn't done much. I think Henderson might give West Virginia a little bit of a better opportunity to, you know, run the ball on the ground with him and you know, do some PA reads and stuff like that. So, but I think Pitt is rather prepared for a two quarterback look.
Nathan Breisinger, Pitt Panthers reporter for Pittsburgh Sports Now, joining us right here on 93.7 The Fan at the 50-minute mark, which is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. Nate, your prediction for this game, how do you feel this game goes down, and who is the MVP once the dust settles on Saturday night?
I think Pitt has to start fast here, and I think they can. And then they have to take the crowd out of it. I think that's going to be the first most important point of this game for Pitt, is to go down there, get some points on the board. They have to score a touchdown. I don't know if you recall from that 2023 game, they ran the ball every single play on their first drive, got down within the 10-yard line, and then were stuffed and had to kick a field goal, and they never found the end zone that entire game. So they have to be able to do that early on here. And Pitt, I just think with this offense, the spread look, the ability to get the ball out quickly to its playmakers like Kenny Johnson, Kateris Hicks, that they'll be able to do so. And I think they'll be able to rack up a couple explosive plays that get in the end zone. So my prediction, 30-10 Pitt. I think it's a little bit bigger of a margin than maybe people think it will be. And I know it's the rivalry game, it's West Virginia, but if there's a game in this rivalry the last 4 years that Pitt really has the upper hand, it's this one. So I think this one going in here, 30-10 Pitt. I think offensively you have to put the MVP on Eli Holstein. I think Desmond Reed can make a lot of plays, but Eli Holstein has to be your MVP. And then defensively, I think Rasheem Biles is going to step up, make a couple plays defensively, maybe a pick, a couple pass breakups. He led Pitt last year in pass breakups. So Biles defensively, Holstein offensively for Pitt in a 30-10 victory to end this four-year stint of this brawl.
A couple of transfers on the offensive line, Nate, especially on the left side of it, but a lot of veterans. Do you think that Pitt could go in there and just push WVU around and it be that big of a day for Reed?
You know, that's where I think the big question lies on offense, and maybe the concern lies. You haven't seen that a ton through these first two games. And again, against Central Michigan and Duquesne, there hasn't been the best push from the line in at least the ground game. And if they can get that against West Virginia, then I think they'll be able to dominate offensively all day between mixing in the pass and the run. But right now, that's where I think some of the questions lie on this offense. And I don't know if they're going to be able to maybe open up the biggest holes for Reed. I think Reed's going to have to do a lot of things on his own in this game.
Nathan Breisinger, check out his stuff. Covers the Pitt Panthers for Pittsburgh Sports Now. Has a big Pitt win tomorrow night. Nate, thanks for taking the time, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.